Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Euro Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Atterface. And after his failure to lead Scotland to the knockout stages, despite trying out every Scottish cliche under the sun, it's the whiskey-drinking, kilt-wearing, shortbread-eating, Kayleigh-dancing, haggis connoisseur, Alex Crook.
I didn't try shortbread, but I did try pretty much everything else. And as you say, it wasn't quite enough to inspire Scotland. So I'm back now on English shores and I've dug out my England shirt from the 2002 World Cup.
That switched more times than Declan Rice. Also with us, TalkSport's European football expert whose knowledge of the Bundesliga is so strong that he can tell you exactly how England will lose to Germany this time around, it's Kevin Hatchard.
Ready for the big one. I've dug out, just for balance, I do want England to win, but just for balance, I've dug out the old Germany shirt, just ready for the big occasion.
Plus, we look at the rest of the tasty last 16 games and Sweden against Ukraine, which includes some absolute belters. Wales take on Denmark, the Dutch face the Czechs, France take on Switzerland, Croatia take on Spain, and the second best tie of the round, it's Belgium against Portugal. We look ahead to it all on the Euro Game Day podcast from TalkSport. Es kommt nach Haus, Kevin!
Yeah.
That translates to it's coming home, right? And
yeah,
it was on the official German Twitter feed late last night, I thought.
Sehr gut, natürlich.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's about the extent of my German. What happens in Germany is I tried for a while to learn, and what would happen is I would use my German and they would always reply to me in English. And you got to the stage where you realised, as honourable as you wanted to be, and you wanted to learn German going over there all the time, you realised your German would never be as good as their English. So it becomes quite disheartening after a while.
Yeah, I can imagine. But I thought it was interesting that the German Twitter feed, the official, I'm not going to call them the National Mannschaft because they don't actually like that phrase.
German fans don't like that phrase.
That is something that Angela Merkel sort of tried to sort of politicized
marketing
more than anything else. Yeah, it was a bit of a marketing tool, wasn't it? But the fact that they put "It's coming home" on their Twitter feed, I thought was quite funny. How have the German media reacted to this historic fixture getting thrown up again?
I think there's a bit of concern in the sense that there was alarm about the way they played against Hungary. I think they're delighted to have got through, but I think the feeling is that they're aware England won't be scared of them. They're aware that England will have seen the weaknesses, will have seen how chaotic it was towards the end of that Hungary game. Because what you have to bear in mind is that this is a team that went into this tournament short on rhythm, with big question marks over the formation. Was the formation the right one? Were all the pieces in the right place? And what we saw against France was a disappointing performance in attack, certainly. It all kind of got temporarily wiped away, that anxiety, by the win over Portugal. But then you go back to the same old problems. Moving the ball far too slowly against a deep back five, which is what Hungary played. Not enough creativity in midfield. And then defensively, real weaknesses. So while I think there's excitement about facing England again, I think there's a fair bit of trepidation as well.
Yeah, if England get past this, well, let's not go there. But Crook, anyone who thinks that England might have got stitched up here might have a cause for complaint, mightn't they? Because England found themselves in this wonderful situation where if they'd won the group, which they did, they get Germany. If they'd come second in the group, they got Spain. If they finished third in the group,
they got the Netherlands. How does that work out?
Well, I have to say, trying to work out that the various permutations was driving you mad. I think it was Monday night, was it, before the last round of games in England's group. It was driving me mad. And I still don't quite understand that you know, how each third place teams end up where they are. I'm a little bit torn on the four third place teams going through. It made for wonderful entertainment on Wednesday night, but it does take away a fair amount of jeopardy. But I agree with Simon Jordan on Twitter on Thursday morning. Gareth Southgate must have been born holding a four-leaf clover because it's history repeating. You know, the way the draw opened up for England at the World Cup, it's happened again. And I would go as far as to say now, when you consider they're taking on a fairly shambolic German team, if they don't make the semi-final, arguably if they don't make the final on that half of the draw, I think it will be an underachievement. And that's a complete reversal of what I said at the start of the tournament when I didn't see England as semi-finalists. But the way it's opened up, I mean, I think
but it hasn't
they're
opened
the highest
up,
ranked team on that half of the draw.
It hasn't opened up yet because they've still got to face Germany. And you can talk
yeah,
about
this
rankings.
This is not Germany of old. Take the name away, take the rivalry away.
Okay, let's talk about the players that are in that team. Manuel Neuer is still one of the best goalkeepers in the entire world. They've got a Champions League winner at the heart of defence in Rudiger from the last couple of weeks. They've got Mats Hummels, who's one of the most experienced central defenders. Okay, he's a little bit slow, but he reads the game better than most. They've got Joshua Kimmich, as Kevin has taught me to say, Joshua Kimmich, playing at right wing, who's absolutely superb. They've got Toni Kroos, who is at Real Madrid and has been absolutely sensational for the last 10 years in midfield alongside Gundogan, who's just won the title with Manchester City. I mean, it ain't all bad, is it, Kevin?
No, I mean, the weak link, strangely enough, is the coach, because I think that's where the majority of the concerns are at right now, because you look at the end of that Hungary game, and Raphael Honigstein, the German football expert, had a great line in his article about the piece. It was like somebody playing a video game, just trying to hammer the buttons and see what would work. And that's how it felt, because he threw on all of the attacking weapons that he had. In the end, Jamal Musiala, just 18, was able to actually make a key contribution. It was his dart into the box that led to Goretzka scoring the equaliser. But they're going to have to really work hard to be in a stable position. But I agree with you, Sam. You dismiss this German side at your peril because they have so much experience. And what I loved about the aftermath of that game against Hungary was the lack of celebration. You look at the face of Joshua Kimmich, he was furious, absolutely furious with the way that they performed. You could see it on his face. He's a competitor. Müller's a competitor. Neuer's a competitor. All of these guys will be working ever so hard to make sure the performance is better. And the one thing Jogi Löw said in his presser that I thought was really interesting is, the one thing I can assure you is we won't play like this against England.
Okay, we will get into the tactical details of it and how England should approach the game in just a moment. A couple of group stage highlights, please. What was your group stage highlight? I mean, it must be seeing Scotland score a goal at a major tournament for the first time in 23 years.
That was great. I nearly lost my voice commentating that goal. But for me, still the goal from the halfway line from Patrick Schick in the first game at Hampden. But again, the drama of Wednesday evening, the fact that England's opponents changed six or seven times over the course of the evening, and then the group actually ended up finishing exactly as it started. So, yeah, for me, those would be the highlights. And I did enjoy England 0, Scotland 0, I think, because I was watching it in Glasgow with ardent Scotland supporters, a couple of Rangers legends. I really got into that game.
Your commentary, Sam. Oh, you're being very kind. I enjoyed the closing. Are you all right? Is everything okay? Have you got a temperature? I enjoyed the closing night of groups. Oh, if you're being sarcastic. Enjoyed the closing night of groups F and E. I wasn't involved, so it was quite nice actually. You could sort of sit back like you and watch the most terrific climax in both. 18 goals, the most on a single day at a European Championships. Brilliant. And I thought this was a really fascinating stat, maybe the stat of the tournament. This is the number of minutes that each team has spent in a losing position in Group F. Hungary, 6. France, 35. Portugal, 64. Germany, 161, Kevin.
Yeah, well,
oh, Hungary.
It's interesting that Jogi Löw has kind of drawn attention to the mentality, and that's true. You know, they've had to really kind of dig deep in some games. Hungary, I think, can count themselves pretty unlucky.
Yeah.
I mean, they've performed really well in all three games.
Yeah.
Nobody really gave them much of a chance, especially after Szoboszlai was injured, who's their best player. But they have shown that not only could they defend well, but some of the goals they scored were terrific. Fiola's goal against France. Yeah, the goal that put them 2-1 up was terrific. And you look at the way they've performed, that's a building block for them, I think, going forward. It was interesting, Crookie talking about his kind of moments of the tournament so far. I had a couple that really sprung to mind. The Andreas Christensen goal for Denmark against Russia. Not only an amazing goal, but just the outpouring of emotion that followed it. I thought that was absolutely terrific. And that, again, one of the moments that reinforces the idea that we need the fans. I mean, that was absolutely terrific to see them go wild after that one went in. And also Connor Roberts scoring that goal against Turkey. The look of pure pride and joy on his face. And I felt like that was a really important moment for Wales, because for some of the guys that weren't involved in Euro 2016, they needed their moment. Guys like Bale and Ramsey have had theirs. The younger guys needed theirs. And I felt like that really was it.
Obviously, the networks chose their games early in the group stage, and switching from BBC One to BBC Two or ITV to ITV4 is not easy, as we think. It's not like when we decide, oh, actually, this game is coming off TalkSport 2, it's going on TalkSport. But I've watched Denmark versus Russia and Ukraine versus Austria on BBC Two and ITV4 over the last couple of days instead of the headline acts, and they have been the better game. Sometimes it's a shame they're on at the same time, all these matches, because you can't concentrate on absolutely everything. But I suppose they wouldn't be as dramatic if they weren't.
It was hard on Wednesday night, because I was watching Portugal against France, and you were flooding our WhatsApp group with what was happening in the Germany game. And I tried to watch both at the same time, but your WhatsApp messages were coming through ahead of the online stream of the Germany game. So I just gave up at the end. It was impossible. And I thought I'd just listen to your text commentary instead.
I was in a bar, actually, with a guy from a foreign TV station. Because we're all in this hotel bubble stuff where we don't really go anywhere else apart from our hotels, stadiums, hotels, studios, etc., etc. And I was at Wembley, and I went up into the bar and I sat down, and there was only me and another guy there. And, you know, after a while, you sort of say, hello, how are you? Hello, how are you? Ah, what do you do? Oh, I'm a commentator, he said, from a foreign TV station. I said, oh, great. I said, funnily enough, I work for ITV. He says, oh, hello. He says, oh, ITV, yes, I've been watching quite a bit of that. He said, I must say, I really, really got angry about the decision to... And he goes, oh, I don't know, maybe you're a friend of Sam Matterface. But I was very, very upset about the decision to replace Clive. I went, just stop you there. I am Sam Matterface. Hello, nice to meet you. The look of absolute crestfallen disappointment, sadness and embarrassment was hilarious. And he paid for all my drinks all night as a result of that.
Wonderful.
So, every cloud.
Wonderful. That's when you either leg it or you double down, isn't it, really?
He just went, I'm so sorry. I've never even heard you commentate. Right. Four times England have faced Germany in the knockout game since 1966 and lost them all. Let's see if we can find a way to make a bit of history.
Gareth has his 2020 vision, but can it come to fruition in 2021? Grealish now, faced up by two, chips it in towards the far post, and it's headed in! What a start from England! For the first time since the 1966 World Cup, England get out of the group of a major tournament without conceding a single goal.
They're all good teams, aren't they? So whoever we play, we either play the world champions, the European champions, or that team that we know so much about over the years.
Germany progress into the round of 16 at these Euros, and they will come to Wembley where they will face England.
You know and I know the footballing gods had Germany on their way to Wembley before this game even kicked off.
Driven in, Goretzka scored, and Germany are level. It's a lifeline for the Germans, and Goretzka is on target.
What a game we've got in front of us now. Absolutely outstanding.
So England take on Germany on Tuesday night at Wembley. How do they get at Germany? Speed is important, right, Kevin?
Yeah, it is. And I think you look at the way that Hungary were able to unlock that German defence, spaces in between centre-backs that was there were so many errors in the build-up to Adam Szolai's headed goal, which was a great goal for Hungary, but they didn't stop the cross. They didn't track the run of Szolai. And, you know, he's not an easy guy to miss. He's huge. So, you know, and he's not the quickest. So for him to get that amount of space in the penalty area is a real concern. I think the runs of Raheem Sterling could be crucial. I think his runs in between centre-backs, his runs in behind, I think could be very, very important. And also, there isn't a huge amount of covering pace in midfield for Germany. Kroos and Gundogan, we know, are terrific on the ball. Defensively, they're not the best. And so I think that midfield battle is going to be key as well. I'll be really interested to see whether Gareth Southgate considers a back five instead of a back four. Because if you look at Germany's route through, if you look at those two games, Portugal and Hungary, Portugal, narrow back four, Gosens and Kimmich found so much space out wide. They were able with that front three to create those wide overloads. And Portugal were never really able to adjust and deal with that. Hungary, deep back five. Germany had no way through. Found it really, really difficult. And it was only by throwing the kitchen sink at it towards the end that they found a way through. So I do think England have the personnel for that. Gareth Southgate's kept his fullbacks fairly, you know, out of the attack so far. And that was a criticism towards him in the Scotland game.
Yeah.
But I think he'll have to do that. I think they can't afford to be too attacking if he's going to play a back four, because that's where Gosens and Kimmich come alive.
Okay, Crook, are you going for back three or back four?
I think based on what Kevin has said there, I think Gareth Southgate is astute enough to realise that maybe almost replicating what Hungary did and going for the back five is possibly the best game plan. And I think I thought all the way along that up against a powerhouse, and Germany still fall into that category, that a back five is England's best route. They've got the personnel to play that. Harry Maguire now will have benefited from feeling his way into the tournament with that game against the Czech Republic. So I would be surprised if he doesn't go with a back five.
Yeah, Gary Neville is pretty sure that he's going to go with the three at the back for this, which is he's suggesting it will be Pickford in goal, Walker, Stones, Maguire, Trippier or James, Henderson, Phillips and Shaw, Saka, Kane and Sterling. Saka sort of almost played his way into the first 11 just because of the fact that he has the ability to drag you so far up the pitch so quickly, and he wriggles through the tightest of spots.
Would that be 34, 35 games in a row that England have changed their starting 11?
Yeah, probably. I haven't got the statistics in front of me, but I imagine that they've changed it. I can't remember the last time they kept an unchanged team.
But I think
does
that's
that worry
okay.
you in any way?
No, I think it's great. I think it shows their strength in depth, and it shows that they're tactically flexible, which was one of the things they were accused of not being 3 years ago.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think if you've got the ability to change it, we do get sucked. And I find this myself. I did this when I was talking about Spain in the build-up to the tournament. I think we sometimes get sucked into this idea of a best 11.
Yeah.
But actually what you want is you want, okay, this is how they play. Let's match up. Thomas Tuchel's very good at this. He will look at the opposition and he will change things around to negate what they do without losing the identity of what he does. That's the key. What you find sometimes is coaches who are too reactive and they're so obsessed with the opposition, they forget what they're good at. And that's the allegation that's been kind of pushed against Pep Guardiola at times in the Champions League, that he's so obsessed with negating the opposition, he forgets what his teams do well. So I don't think that's a problem to chop and change as long as you make the right decisions.
Yeah, I think the one thing I'll be worried about with Germany was the thing I saw in the Portugal game is that the switches of play from right to left very, very quickly. They make the pitch so wide. They literally play it from one touchline to the other, and that can unsettle you as a back line. In England, you've got to be really careful. They've been so good at keeping clean sheets. I think 8 of the last 9, and the only goal they've conceded during that period was when John Stones basically gifted a goal to Jakub Muda, the Polish midfielder, during a World Cup qualifier. They've got to make sure that they keep their distances right. They make themselves aware of that possible switch of play, because it can be incredibly dangerous.
And as we said before the Scotland game, is it about playing the game and not the occasion? Because Kevin will tell us that this is a far bigger game for the English than it is for Germany. Their big rivalry these days is with Holland. And I think maybe there's a bit of an inferiority complex when it comes to England against Germany because of Italia 90, because of Euro 1996.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fantastic atmosphere
around, though,
inside Wembley.
Do you think it could work the other way around, though? Because England's biggest problem with Scotland was that they were expected to go out and beat Scotland. I think this time, then, the sort of history suggests that they're not expected to beat Germany. You know, they are the underdogs in a sense. They can get away with being a little bit more aggressive and trying to hit on the counter-attack.
Possibly, although again, if you look at our WhatsApp group last night, and we've got some very ardent England fans on that, they were all very bullish. You know, this Germany team of rubbish will definitely beat Germany. So I think the mentality will be that England are the favourites, and probably rightly so on form. You'll point to that win against Portugal, but Kevin will tell us that was a bit of a freak result, really, when you look at Germany over the past couple of years. I think England have to go out and express themselves man for man. I think they're a better team than this Germany team, and if they don't let that emotion sweep them away, I think they could win quite comfortably.
See, man for man, I don't think they are better than Germany, but what I do think they are is a more settled unit. I think they work better as a team. There's more cohesion there. There's more tactical responsibility there. I think if you went through the teams and you were talking about CVs and technical quality, more often than not, the Germans would come out on top. But I think the key is actually going to be who does deal with the occasion better. And I think England do have pressure, because I do think England fans feel this more than Germany fans do. I do think England fans are starting to look ahead and starting to talk about how the draws opened up and starting to already plot their route to the final.
That's dangerous, isn't it?
You know, it is. It's really dangerous. And there's the Wembley factor as well. So all of the pressure, I think, is on England. This Germany team, I think, obviously, the German fans want them to go all the way and win it. And there is a level of expectation there that it would be silly to say there's not. But I do think there's a lot of pressure on England, and it's how they deal with that. And I don't think against Scotland, they dealt with it particularly well. They've got to kind of cut out all the background noise and just deal with the actual game itself.
We haven't even mentioned the Gareth Southgate factor, the chance for retribution for him for that missed penalty at Euro 96. I'm sure he's going to be asked about it in every press conference between now and the game. But that's another really fascinating narrative to what is always a tremendous event.
But there again, all that stuff you have to shut out. And there will be, he's going to be asked about it relentlessly, and all the talk will be Euro 96 and all of this. They have to shut all of that out and just concentrate on the game itself, because it's so easy to be distracted by all that background noise.
Last thing we'll say about this before we move on to the other games quickly is that England have been targeting this game for a long time. I think you'll find that I've mentioned it several times to Crook. This day in the diary is the most important one that England will face at this European Championships. The reason I believe that is because I was at the draw in Bucharest in Romania in November, December 2019. And the draw was made, went into the big media hall and was waiting for Gareth Southgate to come up. He walked over and I said, "Oh, you must be pretty happy with the draw that you've got, because you know a couple of the teams really well." And he said, "Yeah, but the first game out of the group is going to be the most difficult one we play." Immediately. That was the first words out of his mouth. So I think, bearing in mind that I know how astute he is and how he will keep that date on his calendar as the target date, I think he would have been thinking about this game and how to handle this game for a very, very long time. Right, okay, let's have a look at the rest of the England half of the draw. And it also includes Wales.
Bale is still going, plays it short.
Yes!
Shot in! And Wales have done it! Wales have won this game by 2-0.
Joachim Bale, right-footed from the edge of the area. The Danes have a fall.
Baratti to drive it in low, and it's guided in. And Italy leads. And what a moment for Pessina!
An opportunity here, and Austria have scored. It's come from the corner from Alaba. And that is a great goal for Austria with Baumgartner.
Marlon for Dubai, and put in by Van Allen for three. And a Dutch of 3 goals to the good.
To Fowler, who crosses to the near post. And the header into the bottom corner. And the Czech Republic take the lead.
Lukaku turns and spins and scores. 2-0 to Belgium, top of the table.
Right footed, sends the keeper the wrong way. It's 2-2, and Portugal are back in the tournament.
Kovacic rolls it into Modric, who finds the corner, gives Croatia the lead.
And now it's 3-0 to Spain, and they can now start planning for the round of 16.
Zuber into Jona Shaqiri! And that might just seal the passage through to the knockout stages for Switzerland.
Good opportunity, playing inside the right-hand side of the area for Benz. Quintimana, who knocks it across the face of the goalkeeper and in off the post. France have scored. Grealish now, faced up by two, chips it in towards the far post and it's headed in. What a start from England.
It's a lifeline for the Germans. And Goretzka is on target. Hungarian defence has been breached.
Klaassen celebrates. He's just scored a goal that's knocked Poland out of the Euros. Sweden will go back top of Group B.
Corner taken, rolls across the goal. Yarmolenko for Ukraine.
They couldn't meet in a semi-final, could they? Well, you never know. Wales against Denmark is Saturday, 5 o'clock, live on TalkSport. I think when they had the prospect of Russia or Finland, I was pretty confident about Wales actually progressing through to the quarterfinals. But there seems to be a little bit of a narrative behind Denmark, and quite rightly so. The game is going to be in Amsterdam, and although I expect quite a few Welsh supporters to invade the Dutch territory, I can see the Amsterdam arena being awash with red shirts come Saturday evening.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think against Finland or Russia, I'd have given Wales a fantastic opportunity to advance the quarterfinals, but I think Denmark have really used the horrendous situation involving Christian Eriksen to galvanise them as a group of players. And I think everybody was, like Kev, absolutely delighted when Christensen smashed in that rocket to take them into the next stage. I think Simon Kjær, for me, has been one of the players of the tournament, both in terms of the character that he showed in the immediate aftermath of Eriksen's collapse and his performances at the heart of that Denmark defence. The same can be said of Kasper Schmeichel. And even without Eriksen, they've shown that they have plenty of attacking riches going forward. I think this is a really difficult game for Wales, and I would go as far now to say I would be surprised if they managed to get through to a quarterfinal. I make Denmark favourites.
I think they are favourites, but I think there are weaknesses there, and I think Wales have shown a real cohesion and a real willingness to dig in. If you go back to that Swiss game, they were second best in that. They should really have lost the game if you look at the chances Switzerland made, if you look at the territory Switzerland had.
Totally.
But they found a way to grab an equaliser. They basically played an away game in Baku against Turkey, and I thought they played ever so well in that game. And Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey give them a chance in any game. And I think they believe that, and I think having seen the tangible difference those two were able to make against Turkey, I could see that happening again. I think they'll look to keep it tight. Denmark, I mean, we shouldn't forget that, you know, in losing Christian Eriksen, and, you know, you take all of the kind of tragedy and put that aside, if you were purely looking on a football perspective, he's their best player. Hmm. He's their most creative player. He's their biggest goal threat. And so they've done really well to mitigate that. But going forward in the tournament, I do think it will make it itself felt, the fact that he's not there pulling the strings.
It has provided an opportunity for young Damsgaard to come into the team and make an impact. And he scored a terrific goal at the weekend, becoming Denmark's youngest ever goal scorer at a major tournament, Euros and World Cup. He's got a huge future, that lad. And I wonder what influence he will have on the game. Likewise, Kiefer Moore, who will come back into the side after missing the previous match because the possibility was that he could have been suspended. Ben Davis and Meppham too for Wales. They got moved around by a super fit, supercharged Italy B team. And Kasper Hjelmeland, who is the Danish coach, is really tactically clever. He's well studied and he knows what works. And they don't lose many games.
No, they don't. And that's why a lot of people were touting them as dark horses coming into this tournament. Okay, Eriksen was clearly a key part in that. But I think that will be a key battle, actually. Kiefer Moore against Simon Kjær. And just what we know about Kjær, not just in this tournament, but from what he's done in Serie A as well, I think he will relish that particular physical battle. And I would back him to negate that threat. But as Kevin says, they do have two genuinely well-cast players, Wales, in Ramsey and Gareth Bale. And I think that's probably the difference, actually. If you look at Wales and you look at Scotland, who, of course, I was covering, Gareth Bale has the potential to be a match
Scotland?
Winner.
Did you hear that, Kev? I didn't realise.
We had not mentioned it.
He hasn't mentioned that.
But he is someone who, with his aura and with what he's achieved in the game, does petrify opponents. So if he's on song, if Ramsey's on song, yeah, you give them an opportunity. But as I say, the emotion that he's carrying Denmark in this tournament, the fact that the Danish fans will outnumber their Welsh counterparts just because of the travel restrictions in place, I think it is all going to come into play. I think it's going to be a fantastic game live on TalkSport.
The one thing Wales mustn't do is lose concentration at set pieces. We saw that Breel Embolo goal for the Swiss. Denmark do pack a punch at set pieces, so they mustn't make mistakes in those scenarios. They've got to just stay in the game, build the platform upon which maybe Ramsey and Bale can shine.
Netherlands against the Czech Republic is a huge game because the Netherlands have sort of bounded into this tournament with gay abandon, haven't they? And they've looked terrific at times, but they haven't had a real test. And actually, you know, the Czechs are very well organised, but they are limited. I'm not convinced that the Dutch are up there as main contenders, the very best, but they are growing into the tournament and they're the team that everybody wants to watch at the moment. Crook, I know that you'd worry about any team in which Memphis Depay was their talisman. That is a direct quote, by the way. but he's been terrific and he's earned himself a little move as well.
Yeah, I mean, no real surprise about that move, but you're right. I mean, you sent his stats to me the other day. Was it 9 goals or assists in his last 10 games? He is someone who is clearly having a really positive impact on that Holland team. So is Wijnaldum, by the way. And it does baffle me a bit that Liverpool were so happy to let his contract run down.
I don't think they were happy, were they? I don't think they were happy. I think they tried to time to, but I think he wanted to move. And he's got a very lucrative move, by the way.
There was one stage when they seemed happy just to let the situation drift on by. And I think they're probably made Wijnaldum's mind up that he would seek pastures new. I like Dumfries as well, actually. He played really
That's
well.
That's another Scots reference. There he goes again.
He can't help himself.
I wondered if you would pick up on that. But I still worry about Holland defensively, and that's stating the obvious, really, when you look at Virgil van Dijk's absence. But they have conceded goals. They have conceded chances in this tournament. I think they'll probably have enough to squeeze past the Czechs, but I've been really impressed with the Czech Republic in the couple of games that I've watched at the West Ham pair. Sofal and Socek, so important for them. Goal of the tournament for me from Patrick Schick, who is a real threat, and they've got a fantastic team spirit, a fantastic unity. So I could see them taking the Dutch close. I could see this going into extra time and maybe even penalties.
I think the Dutch have done really well so far, but they effectively learning a new system on the job. Mm. And you can see that not when they go forwards or Van Aanholt down the left or Wijndal down the left and you've got Dumfries down the right. It's all very exciting. They're making chances, scoring goals. Wijnaldum's playing brilliantly. But my worry about them is as soon as they come up against a good side or a really good striker in Patrick Schick, you see those chances in transition. When their attacks break down, there are those little gaps that pop up when teams break. And so I think the Czechs, who are very, very well coached by Chalavi, they'll just sit in and they'll just hit on the counter. And when you've got Schick's quality, that can make a difference. So the Dutch are rightful favourites, but I do think the Czechs have the potential to cause them a few problems.
Yeah, it is fascinating that prior to the tournament, I don't think they'd really played that back five, had they? Frank de Boer then puts it in place. They go from 4-3-3, which is what the Dutch are screaming out for just before the tournament. We had Marcel on the show on this particular pod beforehand saying that the back five is just, you know, the Dutch supporters just can't have it at all. But actually, it's looked quite fluid up until this point. Let's see what happens next. They take on the Czech Republic. And of course, the winners of the Denmark-Wales game will play the winners of that Netherlands-Czech Republic game in a quarter-final. And that's in Baku, by the way. So there's quite an interesting scenario developing there with lots of travel for people like Wales and Denmark, Netherlands and the Czech Republic. The winners of the England-Germany last 16 game will play the winners of a huge tie at Hampden Park, in which we're going to struggle to satisfy all of the ticket requests for. Sweden against Ukraine. Crook, you're commentating on this one, aren't you?
I am. And I'm more excited about it than clearly you are. You've had it down as the worst game of the last 16.
I think it would have been pick eight from the TV companies, I'm guessing.
Is that why I've got it? Is that what you're saying? I think Sweden have surprised a few people in this tournament, the way they doggedly dug in for a point against Spain. I think even going into the last round of games, most of us made Poland favourites to progress from that tie, but they started on the front foot, obviously stormed into a 2-0 lead, didn't let their heads drop when Poland got back to 2-2 and still found a way to win the game. And I think they have a goal threat in Forsberg, is the correct pronunciation. It will be Forsberg on TalkSport 2 next Tuesday. Isak up front was somebody that Kev picked out as a player to watch in this tournament. I've been impressed with him. And Ukraine as well have delighted us with some of the football they played in the group stage. Yarmolenko looks like a totally different player to the one that is often injured for West Ham. So I think this is going to be a really good game.
Scored a lot of goals already. I did worry for Isak because he looked lively. But after 82 seconds when he was sent to the moon and back by Kamil Glick, I thought, is he going to get up from that? He did, which was fortunate, I think. That was the fastest goal, by the way, in Euros history. Scored after 82 seconds by Emil Forsberg, otherwise known as Emil Forsberg to everybody watching in the UK. Right, let's move on quickly because on the other half of the draw, there is some big hitters. Belgium, Portugal, Italy, Spain and France.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Belgium against Portugal, I think, is the pick of the ties on this side of the draw. Belgium, Portugal, Italy, Austria, Spain, Croatia, France, Switzerland. De Bruyne versus Ronaldo. I do have a bit of a pronunciation conundrum here, by the way. And, you know, let's put it out in the open. Obviously, we know, because we've spoken to him, that the way you say Kevin De Bruyne's name is Kevin De Bruyne, right? But yep. No, and we all know it. He's done adverts on Talk Sport for a shirt manufacturer in which he says, hello, I'm Kevin De Bruyne, and I wear this type of shirt. You should too, basically. So we've obviously called him Kevin De Bruyne as a result of the fact that he says it himself. But all the TV commentators call him De Bruyne. So when I'm doing this game, Portugal against Belgium, live on ITV on Sunday night, I am a bit concerned about how to go. Kev, any advice?
Go with De Bruyne. Absolutely. I've been a De Bruyne for years.
So we owning it, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Go for it. Go for De Bruyne. Because, I mean, even when he was back in Germany with Wolfsburg and with Werder Bremen, he was asked in press conferences, oh, by the way, how do you say your name? And he said De Bruyne. So I've kind of stuck with that for years. It's a really difficult one. It's the whole Bruno Fernandes thing.
Well, it's not even that, though, is it? Because I think, except, you know, we're never going to call him Bruno Fernandes, are we? Because obviously that's not how we speak. But actually,
this one's doable.
This one's doable. It is part. You know, it is our lexicon. We can do
wave the flag, Sam De Bruyne. You can be a part of the vanguard.
Anyway, back to Belgium against Portugal. And I've got to say, Ronaldo scored 3 penalties, has he, at this tournament so far? But if you watch him, he doesn't seem to be able to take anyone on anymore. Not one-on-one. I mean, it just doesn't happen. His powers are fading, aren't they? I mean, he can still run. He's still a machine. But he's not what he once was. I mean, I watched him in the Germany game. I watched him last night. And he just kept trying to take on French defenders and getting nowhere near.
Well, by the time catches up with all of us, doesn't it? But I thought he was really dogged for winning the second penalty. The handball, he could easily have given that up. So what he lacks maybe in the ability to take on defenders now, he certainly hasn't lost that desire and that determination. And that absolutely might just be enough. to carry him over the winning line. But yeah, you're right. Certainly, he isn't the player of old, but that is inevitable. It annoys me that he keeps scoring these penalties because I've still got my Romelu Lukaku for top goal scorer betting slip, and Ronaldo is doing his best to kibosh that at the moment. But you're right. This for me, if you take away our patriotism, this is the best game in the last 16. Belgium, I think for me, are still yet to show their full capabilities. I think they coasted through an easy group, as I expected, without having to hit top gear. I think Portugal look like maybe they're not quite the team that we expected them to be. We were saying this is a better Portuguese squad than we've seen previously, but I think there are vulnerabilities defensively. So if Belgium can hit top gear, I think they can get through this, and it will be a real statement result for Roberto Martinez, who I'm told is on Tottenham's radar, by the way, after the tournament. But then, isn't everybody? I mean, I've got my...
So you, Crookie. I was going to say, I mean, I got a text message the other day. It says, 18 to 24-year-olds, your first interview for Tottenham Hotspur is available now. Look, let's be completely honest about it. They've had issues, Portugal, in that right fullback area. They lost Cancelo. Semedo's just picked up an injury, and Diego Dalot, who wasn't even in the squad, had to come in during the game against France. I mean, if he is their first choice right back going into this last 16 game, I mean, Eden Hazard, Thorgan Hazard, whoever it is who plays out on that left-hand side is going to have a field day.
Yeah, it is a concern for them. I quite like Dalot. I think you look at him, it didn't work out, that move to Manchester United, but I do think there's some real talent there. Semedo has been a concern defensively. I think he's been all over the place defensively. So I'm not sure they're weaker defensively because Dalot's there, but it's a team that isn't quite right in terms of the balance between attack and defence. Yeah, and what Fernando Santos tried to do was he tried to get a couple of holding players in there, in William Carvalho and Danilo, and neither of them are playing particularly well, and it just didn't work. Bringing in Renato Sanchez, I think, has been really important for them.
Yeah. Danilo's been playing as a centre-back for most of the season, hasn't he? He's been playing for PSG.
So he went into it not in great form. William Carvalho didn't have a great season with Betis. So you had, that was a big, and Andy Brassel, who we know very well, of course, he did pinpoint this ahead of the tournament. He said, the big worry for me is defensive midfield. And he's been proven absolutely right. Renato Sanchez, the thing that he does, he adds to the attack because he's got this ability to burst past people. He can shoot from range. He can do all of that stuff. But also, he will work without the ball. And that's very important. And especially when he moves into those wide areas to try and protect the fullback, he actually does a really good job in there. So I think that's a big step for them to have brought him into the starting 11. And I think he has to stay there, really. I agree with you about Ronaldo. How many people... You'd look at the top scorers list and you go, oh, Ronaldo's at the top. He must have been one of the top players at the tournament. I don't think I'd even have him in the top 10.
He's had about six touches and three of those have been penalties.
But he is an aura, and he is what he is he's somebody that defenders think about. And what it does is it ties up defenders and it allows guys like Jota to do their thing, Bernardo Silva to do their thing. So he is important in that sense. And there's always a performance in him somewhere to just kind of explode into life and bang, suddenly he's knocked the team out. So Belgium have to be ever so careful about this one.
But, Alex, if Roberto Martinez is serious about taking Belgium to the title, this has got to be a Belgian victory because this is the opportunity for the golden generation. They're on the toughest side of the draw, but if they're going to come good, now's the time.
It's the last opportunity for the golden generation because there are big worries about them defensively, and Portugal have enough attacking quality to exploit those. I think ultimately it will come down to how much influence De Bruyne and Lukaku can have. And there have been times at this tournament when Lukaku has looked absolutely unplayable. I mean, when he's running at defenders, it must be like a steam train hurtling towards you. He's so powerful. He's so quick. And I love the way that he put a Manchester United fan in his place on Twitter. I think Kevry tweeted it the other night saying he didn't have a first touch at Old Trafford. Not true, by the way. And I think he gets really disrespected by Manchester United fans. Lukaku did well in a pretty average Manchester United team. And we're seeing now, in my opinion, that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer probably made a mistake dispensing with his services so quickly. I think he could well be the difference maker, not just in this game, but in the tournament for Belgium.
What I love about the way he's developed is that he's added that ability to play with his back to goal. He can bring others into play. If you look at the partnership he's had with Lautaro Martinez at Inter, very, very good with his work outside the box. But as you say, Crookie, when he gets moving, he's so difficult to stop. And I think he is really comfortable now using his body to just pin defenders and just say, right, get out my way. I'm going to, and, you know, his turns are clever in the penalty area. His movement's really good. He's good in the air. He is close to as good as it can get in terms of a centre forward. I mean, you talk about Lewandowski, you talk about Harry Kane. He's right up there with centre forwards on the planet. He's close to as good as it gets.
The winner of Belgium-Portugal plays Italy in Munich. And Italy obviously have been everybody's team of the tournament so far. They rested 8 players in their game against Wales, their final group game. So they'll be fresh for that match with Austria at Wembley on Saturday night. I don't think there's many of us that believe that Austria can withstand the Italian onslaught, do we?
No, this is a tap-in for Italy. I think it will be interesting when they come up against Belgium or Portugal, because you look at the group, yes, they were the best team in the tournament in terms of group stage victories and how convincing they were, but you need to scratch beneath the surface. Turkey underwhelmed. They were really poor, stunk the place out. Wales have done well to get into the knockout stages, but they're not going to pull up any trees beyond this stage. And Switzerland, A lot of players who don't play regularly for their clubs.
It's more impressive that they did beat those teams, especially the first two, easily, Kevin, because of the way those teams played against them, banking up and trying to stop them from opening up what was rigid back lines. When they play Belgium or Portugal, there's going to be more space for them to attack into.
Yeah, and what I love about them is they can hurt you in lots of different ways. They can hurt you through midfield. They have wide forwards like Insigne that can do damage. A lot of talk about the centre forwards ahead of this tournament, but I like Immobile a lot. You look at the way he scores in big volumes for Lazio.
Can he do it outside of Rome, though?
Well, we'll find out, won't we? I guess we'll have to find out. But, I mean, his record for Lazio is just outrageous, really. I mean, he is an all-time great for them. I like Belotti as well. They've got guys that haven't really come to the party yet. I mean, Federico Chiesa, I think, is a terrifically talented player, but obviously Berardi has been ahead of him, so it's a really good battle that on that right-hand side. It's a cliche, but I think it's true. It feels like a club side. There does feel like a real togetherness there. It feels like everybody knows their job. They're quite happy with their roles, and there's a good bit of competition in places. The one thing I'd say about Austria, and I agree, they are massive outsiders here, but it's a bit of a free hit for them because they went into this tournament with a big cloud over them. Lots of doubts about the coach, Franco Foda, and whether it was the right formation, whether he was too negative. And people who watch Austria a lot were gobsmacked by the performance against Ukraine. They did not see that coming at all. They were much more proactive, much more aggressive. And I think even if Italy win this game against Austria, they might have a few bruises because you look at the work rate of guys like Lima, Zabitzer, Baumgartlinger. They're going to make them work for this. So Italy may well get through, but it's going to be a tough game for them physically.
And it will be the biggest game of the Austrians' lives, won't it?
I mean, oh, completely.
They've hardly ever win a game in a major tournament, let alone get to the knockout stages.
Well, Zabitz has already said, I mean, this is a guy who's played a Champions League semi-final and he was asked, is this the biggest game of your career? And he went, absolutely.
Yeah,
you know, play at Wembley, you know, all the history that Wembley has, playing in a knockout game for Austria. So they are really excited about this and the pressure has just been lifted off them because all of the negativity by qualifying has just evaporated and they're thinking, right, nobody thinks we can win it. We can just give it a real go.
You never know. Spain against Croatia is another big meeting of two giants of European football. Spain just don't want to have a penalty again, do they? I mean, 6 of the 11 penalties taken at Euro 2020 have been missed. It's outrageous, really, isn't it? How can you miss so many penalties? But they've missed two of them, Spain, from two different kickers as well. And they take on a Croatia team who you saw on Tuesday night, Crook. I mean, Spain haven't been perfect. I mean, they dispatched a very poor Slovakia team with a little bit of a helping hand from Martin Dubravka. What do you think about Croatia's chances?
I think we've been talking about England as a team who will improve and almost feel their way into the tournament. And I think you could say exactly the same against Croatia. Of the group stage matches that I watched, and I watched every game in that group, barring England against the Czech Republic, the Croatian performance against Scotland at Hampden Park was the most impressive. Scotland were very naive. They played it at 110 miles an hour. They were a bit prehistoric, to quote Graeme Souness, in lumping balls up to Lyndon Dykes and hoping he would flick it on. And Croatia just used all their experience, and they are one of the most experienced teams in the competition in terms of international appearances, just to lull them into a false sense of security and pass them to death in the second half. And they have two world-class players in Luka Modric, who ran that game at Hampden, and Perisic, who's been outstanding in this tournament. He's now level with Davor Suker as the Croatians record goal scorer.
Same age as Davor Suker, isn't he?
Well, I mean, Luka Modric looks like he could play until he's 70. He's a Rolls Royce of a player, and it was a stunning goal that he scored. But there were a couple of big tactical tweaks as well that Zlatko Dalic made in that game against Scotland. Most notably, a change at right back, where Vyshalko has been such an important player for them. He was biffed out. Josip Juranovic came in, made the opening goal, had a really impressive game at right fullback. He dispensed with Andrei Kramaric as well. Brought in Nikola Vlasic, who scored the opening goal. So it was almost a perfect game plan from Zlatko Dalic. And I think they will get better and better. And I think they'll beat Spain. I think if Modric can have as much control in midfield as he had against Scotland, I think Croatia will come through this.
Also getting better and better as the tournament go on, I think you could probably label that at France, who take on Switzerland. They're doing what they always do, Kevin, is warm up as they go through the tournament. Look, I can't see this going any other way than a Swiss pummeling, because they're unambitious, aren't they? Petkovic has had the same team, same crop of players for about, it feels like about 20 years, but it's not. It's about six or seven. And apart from, I mean, Seferovic scored a terrific goal the other day from outside the penalty, but he never scores from inside the box. I mean, he'll have 20 chances 7 yards out and he'll miss them. And then he'll score a worldie like that from outside the area. He's a real problem for them. But I'm not entirely sure they'll get too many chances against a France team who've just got weapons all over the park.
Yeah, I think the game against Italy is probably a signpost here, because they came up short in that game, and I would expect them to do that again. And this is what they do. They qualify for tournaments, they get through the group, and then they get knocked out in the first knockout round. And I would expect that to happen to them again. France, I think, have played within themselves. I think they did against Germany. I think against Hungary, they were taken by surprise to an extent by the ferocity of that Hungarian performance, but they still made chances and still should have really won the game. I thought they probably should have beaten Portugal as well, actually. And it was only a brilliant double save by Rui Patricio that actually kept them out, because Pogba had that shot touched onto the frame of the goal and then a brilliant second save from Griezmann. So I think France have still got a couple of gears. I think Pogba has been supreme, absolutely good. His passing, his awareness, his strength, just the whole lot. I mean, I still haven't quite got over the pass for Luka Hernandez for the own goal for Hummels against Germany.
Sensational, that wasn't it? Outside of the boot, brilliant crossfield pass, pinpoint magic, absolute magic. One bone of contention I've got, and one thing I highlighted, I think, in the pre-tournament pod, the thing that scares me the most about France is their goalie. He is reckless, and he came out, punched Danilo in the head the other night. And one or two people were asking, why is that a penalty? Well, it's a penalty because he doesn't get the ball. He just tries to take the head off Danilo. But also, he comes out with his arm stretched like with a closed fist, misses the ball. The ball actually gets headed by Danilo onto his hand, and then he follows through into the face of Danilo, and then he bends his arm and his elbow almost comes out into the jaw of Danilo. I mean, it was really reckless, and he was very, very lucky, I think, that the tolerance level at this tournament is so high, because it was a definite penalty, and on another day it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, it was dangerous play from Hugo Lloris, and he does have those lapses in concentration, those errors of judgment, maybe a bit of the David James about him, where because France are so good going forward, he's not as involved in matches as perhaps he would like to be. So therefore, when he does get the opportunity to get involved, he makes rank bad decisions. I think you're right. If that happened in a Premier League game, he would have probably been heading for a straight red card. So it is a concern, but that concern is outweighed by the amount of attacking ability that France have. And we haven't really seen the best of Kylian Mbappe yet, have we? I think he's still waiting to burst into this tournament and produce a man of the match display.
I think with Lloris, what's important to remember is, I agree with you guys, I think if you were thinking about the elite bracket of goalkeepers, he's not in it. He's absolutely not in it. But they see him as such an important leader for this team. And I think there's so much belief in him as a guy, as a goalkeeper in general. He will make mistakes, but he'll also dig you out of trouble at times. And the data guys will tell you that in terms of what he's expected to concede and what he actually concedes makes him out to be a very good goalkeeper. You know, I think they allow that. What's going to be interesting for them going forwards in terms of their goalkeeping situation, Mike Maignan has just had a brilliant season for Lille and has just won Ligue 1. And I think he is going to seriously challenge Lloris going forward. So I don't think this will be his last international tournament with France, but going beyond the World Cup, I'd be surprised to see him still in goal for them.
Okay, thank you very much, Kev. Thank you very much, Alex. Nice to see you back wearing an England shirt. I'm sure that it'll be a Germany one by Wednesday if England lose. That's it from us. We're back on Monday ahead of the England game with Trevor Sinclair, looking back on the Wales and Denmark game and the Belgium-Portugal fixtures. Plus, we will bring you the latest news as England look to do something they haven't done since 1966. No, not lift a trophy, just beat the Germans in the knockout stages. Auf Wiedersehen.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds, we set them. Form guides, we've got them. Expert opinions, we share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.